Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Books and Boba, our second episode. Welcome back. My name is Marvin Yue. I'm one of your hosts for this book club about Asian American authors and the books that they write.
And I'm Rira Yu, and I'm also a co-host of this podcast.
Co-founder. She's the brainchild, actually.
No, she is. She stop it.
Sets up our book clubs, decides what we read.
Pretty much, I'm a dictator. So just read this book.
I didn't
just
say that. I said
no. I know.
I'm as a person joking. Who doesn't normally read, it's been good to have someone tell me what to do. But yeah, welcome. This is our second episode. This time we're discussing Celeste Ng's debut novel called Everything I Never Told You, and it's a quite a turn from our first episode. Or the first book that we read.
Yeah, way different in tone and genre. This is a literary thriller. So
let's just jump right into our discussion. So for those of you new to Books and Boba, we are a book club that meets for reals before recording this podcast. So right before this session, we actually met up with our group and had a really great discussion. And so if you're in the LA area, you can join us as well. And for those of you not in the LA area, you can discuss via our Goodreads forum. And also by listening to this podcast and, you know, leaving us comments or your thoughts on Facebook and Twitter. But yeah, won't you, I'm going to let our leader, Rira.
No.
Start us off.
I guess we should probably summarize the book somehow. Yeah. It's about a mixed race Asian American family in the 1970s, and their family dynamics is their family relationship is changed forever after they find out that Lydia, their daughter, their 17-year-old daughter, I think, is found dead in the town's lake. And yeah, it's just about the aftermath of that and just the family grappling with why their daughter is found dead and if it's a suicide or if it was foul play. And yeah, it's a very interesting novel because right from the first page, you know that Lydia is dead.
Just a reminder that we will be spoiling Everything I Never Told You. So if you haven't read it yet, read it first before listening to us. Or if you don't care, you can listen to us and then have all your reactions tainted by our own discussion. But if you haven't read it yet, go ahead and read it. We'll wait.
And we're done waiting. Okay.
Yeah, let's get going.
All right. This was my second time reading the book. I had recommended this book because I had read it the first time and I cried a lot. I had a huge emotional attachment to it. But yeah, where do you want to start off with?
I mean, I guess opening impressions. Like
opening impressions.
For me, definitely I don't usually cry during any form of media. Mm-hmm. I did feel many times that I had to reread certain passages just to, like, cuz there was an emotional heft to it. And I guess for me, what's the most interesting thing about this book is that it's not at all an immigrant story.
No, it is
which
not.
Is
like it's a second generation story
in the world of Asian American
that's set in media. Ohio in the 1970s.
Yeah, and I found it interesting that even though it wasn't, it was still about parents projecting their needs and their personal like issues onto their children, you know, wanting for them what they themselves didn't have. You know, you have the Chinese American father, James, who just wants his kids to be as American as possible, fit in, have tons of friends, and be popular. And you have the mother,
Marilyn.
Yeah, Marilyn, who is a white woman from Virginia, who gave up her dreams of becoming a doctor to have her family, and she just wants her daughter to be.
She wants the her doctor, daughter, yeah, right? Because it's because like I said, it's set in the 70s, and her mother like grew up. Marilyn grew up in the 50s, where women weren't. There were very few women in the medical field, so it's kind of interesting because when we hear about tiger parents, we think like Amy Chua. we think like, oh, the immigrant mom who wants her child to have all the things that she didn't growing up, to have better opportunities. And it's true with Marilyn and her daughter, Lydia. She does want her daughter to have more opportunities than she did growing up. She wants her to excel in science and to be exceptional. I think that's a line that she actually says in the book. Like, I wanted Lydia to be exceptional.
Yeah.
And wow, have I, how many times I've heard that from like other Asian American friends.
Right. That was something that really came up a lot during our discussion at our live book club, was reminding ourselves that this was a different time, right? Because it's really easy to read and just like, especially in our experience, having like being Asian American, seeing these characters and having this kind of, it could be a modern struggle. Like the struggle between like teens and parents is something that's going to be like fodder for media for like ever. Yeah.
The interesting thing about this book is, like, it jumps back in time, like, within chapters. So, like you'll start off with present day, Lydia is dead, and the family is just kind of trying to get their bearings. Mm-hmm. And then the next chapter is, it goes back in time to when Marilyn and James meet for the first time. And James is a American history teacher at a community college, not community college, but
it's like a
women's college, right? No, not a women's college.
I think it was a women's college.
Was it a women's college? But then there were men in her class.
Mm-hmm.
But
he was a Harvard postgrad student or postgraduate person or graduate student.
Yeah.
Because I think back then, like Harvard had like a sister,
university a sister or something, university
that like women can go to, and then they can take co-ed classes or something.
Oh, okay, that's probably what it was.
Yeah,
yeah. But James is an American history professor, and when I say American history, I mean like American history,
Wild
like
West,
yeah, cowboys. Yeah. I think his course was called Cowboys and the Great American West. I don't know, but something with cowboys.
Yeah. I remember this was a sticking point with one of our members being like just having this Asian character wanting to be so American that they like pick the most American thing to like become an expert on.
Well, right? with James, It's really interesting with James because not only do we just go back to how the parents met, we also go back to their childhood and
right.
how they were raised. And that's not just for James, but also for Marilyn. And I guess since we're talking about James, so with James, we learn that his parents are immigrant parents. And this is probably in the 40s, right?
Yeah. And not just immigrant parents, but like paper sons.
Paper sons. Yeah. And for the people who don't know that term, paper sons is back when the Chinese Exclusion Act was still in action, people found a loophole to bring people over.
So like the rule was that you can only immigrate if you were related to someone already in the States.
Yeah, so right? People who were already in the States, they if they had like a dead nephew or if they just wanted to make some extra cash, they would pretend that they would have a son in the mainland. And people would pay money to pretend to be relatives of these Chinese Americans. And that's how they would get to America. But because they weren't American citizens, there was always this danger of being found out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, this was pre-Civil Rights Act, Chinese people couldn't be citizens.
Yeah.
Their children could though, right?
And I think their children could become American citizens. And I think that's where, James is. I think he was born in, I don't think he immigrated. No, he was born
in the States.
He was born in the States.
I think the story goes his parents moved out to somewhere in New England, I want to say.
Yeah, like Connecticut or like Massachusetts. Think boarding school with like rich white people.
Yeah.
Like Gossip Girl. Like where would they go to boarding school? That's pretty much where they moved to.
Yeah. So they lucked into this position because I guess there was someone, another paper son or something, had to go back home.
Yeah.
Right.
I think what happened was James's father, his paper brother, he was working as a janitor at this elite boarding school in New England. And they said that, if their son can pass the entrance exam, he can get in for free.
Right, because the parents are employees.
Yeah, because the parents are employees. And so they just pack up their belongings and they just go to New England where there are pretty much no Asians. They are the only people of color in that town. And James's father becomes a janitor there and James's mother becomes a cafeteria worker.
Yeah, a lunch lady.
And miraculously, James passes the test. And he's like,
I don't even think it's miraculously. He passed the test because like he's studies. Right?
Well, yeah, he studied and his parents made sure he like knew the questions before going in. I mean, not to say that he cheated, but like he definitely put in the hours. And the book mentions that the book mentions that James knew even as a child that the test that he took was meant to keep him out. It wasn't designed to let him in. But he already knew all of, like, he knew.
Yeah.
So he worked his butt off and he got in.
So he becomes a student at the school and it quickly becomes apparent that he's the only person of color in this entire school. He's the only one who doesn't have, like, comes from a rich family.
Which is also a class issue. Like, his parents are working blue-collar jobs at the school. At the school, and he's embarrassed by it. And I think that's when the notion of assimilating and erasing his culture. I think at one point in the book, he says that he stopped talking in Chinese to his parents, but even way before that, he stopped talking to his parents at all. And I think that influence is carried out to his, like the way that James raises his children, because he suppresses a lot of his own emotions and he has a very complicated relationship with his son, particularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then he marries Marilyn, who has her own set of identity issues.
Identity baggage. I guess switching gears, Marilyn, she grew up in an era where women weren't given a lot of choices.
Yeah.
They were expected to become homemakers and wait on their husbands and always put their family's demands ahead of their own wishes. And her mother was like a home ec teacher.
Yeah.
And like her father had left the picture long ago.
Yeah. And she was very much also like influenced by her parents.
Yeah, by wanting to be her mom.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a common thing, you know? Like, you see your parents and you just don't want to turn out like them.
Yeah. And so she always wanted to learn. She wanted to be a doctor, right?
She wanted to be a doctor.
She wanted to, even high school, like, she wanted to sign up for
shop. Woodworking class.
Instead of home ec. And then she got mansplained out of it, right?
Yeah, she got mansplained pretty hard. And even when she got into college for like the pre-med track,
yeah,
she encounters boys who are always...
Well, even because this was back when the stereotype was that women go to college to meet eligible mates.
Yeah. Right? To get their MRS degrees. That's just... I'm from Georgia, and that's still a thing, by the way. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like, girls are expected to go to college to find eligible bachelors and get married. And I think there are some classmates of mine out there who already have a kid, and they're, like, the same age as me, and it's kind of freaky. But yeah, this, like, she goes to college and she meets James because James is her professor.
For the cowboy class.
Yeah. And she's attracted to James because he's different. She thinks that he'll understand her because he's quote-unquote Oriental.
Yeah.
That was a word that kept, you know.
Yeah.
At the time.
Again, you have to remember the time and place type of setting.
Oh, but man, yeah, did it sting
it
reading
great.
That. Yeah.
That's an interesting, because my parents still use that sometimes too. And
really?
It's hard to like explain that it's not okay.
Yeah.
Because then he goes into like, well, when I use it to describe myself, it's okay.
Well, Asian American, the term is still relatively new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think even in Asia, people use Oriental to
describe. No, my family definitely used the word Oriental in Korea, and I had a long talk with them on like why that's not okay. But James is attracted to Marilyn because he doesn't even recognize her when she comes into his office after hours. Like,
yeah,
he says that she blends in perfectly, and that is why he first falls in love with her. And I think that just sets up a very toxic relationship.
Yeah, and then when they finally do get married, because she gets pregnant, has to drop out of school. And that's another thing about time and place.
Yeah.
This is a time when their contraception was like fringe science at best.
And yeah. Like, and abortions were dangerous, if not illegal at the time, and very expensive. So it's not like she could have just.
And something that I had to think about was, why couldn't she just take classes while
she was like a mom?
Or while she wasn't super pregnant, like...
I mean, I think it just depends. And with Marilyn and her background, I think even though she tried to escape her mom's, drilling into her, saying that, you need to make eggs 6 different ways in order to keep your family happy. Like, if you're sad, just bake a cake. Pretty much that Betty Crocker cookbook that is just, like...
A symbol of evil.
Just
what's the opposite of like the feminist agenda? Like,
I don't know, anti-feminism. I don't know.
Yeah, the housewife kind of stereotype. But yeah, so they get married, and then this was another pivotal moment in, I guess, James's and Marilyn's relationship that will come back later on. That was the first time she introduces her mom to James.
Oh.
Right.
Oh, that was heartbreaking.
And then her mom, you know, so excited that she met a Harvard man.
And she thinks that he's white, like he's like a rich white guy because his last name is Lee.
Yeah, which is like a Southern gentleman.
Yeah.
Like it's a, yeah, they're like very, very famous Southern family, right? Fought in the War of Northern Aggression.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. And then has like a total meltdown.
Yeah, a total meltdown.
When she finds out that James is Asian.
Yeah. I mean, this is also like shortly after interracial marriage actually gets passed as...
In Loving versus...
Loving versus Virginia. That was only...
That's Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, that was like only a couple of...
Yeah, this was like, a time...
Like a year or two before James and Marilyn get married, I think. Yeah.
Where it was a Supreme Court case.
It was a Supreme Court case.
That made interracial marriages legal in the United States.
I mean, before then, like in the state of Virginia, which is where the Loving case takes place, you couldn't even have interracial sex. Like, you Like, the police staked out in front of the Loving family's house, hoping to bust in while they were having sex so they can arrest them. But when they bursted into their house, like, they were just sleeping in bed, and they had the marriage certificate above their above their bed, and that was taken into evidence to arrest them and say, like, oh, you can't marry because, like, you're black and he's white.
There's a movie coming out. It'll come into the public consciousness soon, this whole story of the Lovings. But yeah, I mean, she pretty much tries to talk her out of it at the courthouse and screams, like, think of your children. You'll regret this in the future.
Your children will never fit in.
Yeah.
And I guess in a sense it is true, because... Like everyone in the Lee family, regardless of race, they feel like an outsider at one point.
Right.
With Marilyn, she feels like an outsider because she feels like she didn't attain her potential. Like, she was supposed to be this doctor and she's not. And with James, he's constantly trying to assimilate, and he's so super conscious of how different he is. And he wants his children to... be like the perfect American kids, but they're not. They're like, they're mixed.
They're kids.
Yeah, and they're kids. You really shouldn't like pressure your children to. Children aren't like Play-Doh. You can't mold them into what you want them to be. They'll take on their own identities.
So let's talk about the children then.
Yeah, Lydia. Yeah.
You want to start with Lydia or start with Nathan?
Lydia or Nathan.
Let's start with Lydia.
Lydia, because she is the central character. She's the reason why there's a story. There's a book in the first place.
So Lydia is the middle child.
Middle child.
The second daughter. The older daughter.
The oldest daughter,
Of James and Marilyn. And she immediately So the book does something super interesting, which is basically you're able to jump into everyone's point of view.
Yeah, it's not a first-person view. Everything's written in third person, so the reader gets all the information, and the characters are kind of left scrambling.
So which makes it frustrating sometimes, because the reader understands that, like, just what they should say.
Yeah, the book is called Everything I Never Told You, and you, like, from the very beginning, you understand why it's called that, because it's like, why don't you just sit down and talk about your feelings, and none of this would have happened, or maybe it would have happened anyway. I don't know,
And we can talk about how it all ties into, like, communication, mental health, therapy, all that stuff. We can talk about that later on.
But Lydia,
the first chapter sets up that the whole family, like, she's kind of like the golden child.
Yeah,
right.
And we're introduced to her without even meeting her in the first chapter, because she's already dead.
Yeah.
And we're introduced to her by, like, her mom going into her room, and we see this perfect picture of like this pretty popular girl who gets straight A's and who's taking college courses and wins science fairs. And I don't know about you, but, like, as soon as I read that, I was like, no, there's no way. Like, no one can be that perfect. And parents never know their child completely. So
I didn't know at that point that it was, like, I thought it was, like, oh, like, maybe Asian Tiger dad or something. I didn't know it would still be the mom.
The mom, right?
I thought it was the most interesting thing is that, and then we had the big talk about how genetically is this even possible, but the book describes her as having
blue eyes
and kind of taking after her mom more than her dad and other siblings, meaning that she to borrow a term from the black community, like, presents as more white, even though she is obviously mixed and not white.
And it doesn't really help her to gain friends either, because they still think of her as this Chinese girl, even with blue eyes.
But this becomes a sticking point with her father.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Because he, like, what James wants most of all is for his kids to have what he didn't have, which is friends, this, like, this to be accepted into, like, to be popular and to, you know, be all American kids.
Yeah. And I think the reason why, I mean, we'll go back to Nath later, but I think the reason why he puts so much of that hope on his daughter to be pretty and attractive to other people and to have friends, it's because with his son reminds him too much of his, like, schoolboy self.
Yeah.
And that's just so interesting because because it is like he is looking at his daughter with this, like, stereotypical male gaze. Just like, oh, like, you're a girl, you have to wear this pretty dress.
And yeah.
One scene that really stuck out to me in the book was when he gives her the locket for, it's not her birthday, but it's like a makeup birthday present.
Yeah.
And he gives it to her, and Lydia, I don't remember the exact quote, but when she receives the locket, she says, "Finally, an actual gift, not a hint. Something that says that I'm perfect the way I am."
Right.
But then...
because she's used to getting gifts from her
mom.
Her mom.
And her mom always buys these medical books that she, like, clearly her mom just wants for herself. And I think she actually steals those books back.
Her father also gives her books that, like, he wishes he had when he was her age.
Yeah,
like,
on how to make friends,
how to be popular.
Yeah.
And that's just like... yeah, like,
I laughed so hard when he gave her those books, and he's so proud of himself. He's and then when Lydia gets upset at him for giving her those books, he thinks it's because she already has friends, and she's like insulted by the fact that like he thinks that she's not popular, but she's actually angry at him because she didn't give him what he thought that she would want.
Yeah.
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 But like back to the locket scene. She thinks that it's truly a gift. It's something that he bought thinking about her. But what it actually was like, oh, like, I heard that girls nowadays are wearing silver and it'll help you, like, gain friends. And it's like the thing, it's like the trend. And that's when she realizes it's just,
it's still something he's doing for himself.
Yeah, it's like a shackle. Like, she doesn't even wear the necklace anymore. And when Hannah, the youngest sister,
puts it on,
she, like, rips it out, saying, like, you will never, ever wear this again. And, like, but it also, she also imparts, like, the message of, like, oh, like, don't let other people's wishes mold you. Don't follow other people's expectations.
Right.
And I mean, Hannah is a unique character. I mean,
I liked her character.
Yeah. I felt so bad for her. she's the youngest child.
Yeah.
She's
the
nursery, her room was in the attic. Yeah. And that's just heartbreaking because who puts a baby in an attic? Like, why would you do that? But right.
So Lydia is like this avatar of her parents' like wishes. Like, she takes the brunt of all their expectations, right? She shoulders the load, and as a result, gets all the attention, good and bad.
Yes. And that leads to a complicated sibling relationship with her brother Nath.
And so let's talk a little bit about Nath.
I thought it was really weird that he's the oldest child and he's a son.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get any attention. Or at least he only gets negative attention.
That's when you know it's a second generation Asian-American story.
with Nath,
he grows up to be just like James, like kind of bookish, kind of awkward, lanky, not totally athletic.
Yeah.
Like there's this, I remember there's a passage where James has wanted him to be good at sports, tall, be a basketball player. And I think Nate ends up being super into space.
Yeah. And science. Yeah. Space and science. And And, like, to his dad, it's not enough.
Yeah.
And, like, and the weird thing about James and Nate's relationship is James knows that he's saying such harsh criticisms to his son.
Yeah.
And, like, but it's become a reflex to him to criticize his son. Yeah. And he never apologizes for it.
So that was, yeah, that was a big thing, like, that affected one of our life book clubbers today, was just how much of a dick James was to his son all the time. And the sucky thing is, and, like, this is where we can talk about James's character too, like, him wanting to be, or his, like, toxic masculinity-ness of needing to be strong and needing his son to be strong as well, or, like, not, like, whenever he, like, whenever his son gets, you know, bullied or picked on, like, inside his inner monologue, James is always thinking, I know what that feels like. He knows he should, like, comfort his son, but ends up just, like, kind of making a really bad dad joke, or...
A dad joke? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I'm trying to look for the passage. I don't think I'll be able to find it. This book is very, very long. But I think it's a scene where they come back home from the swimming pool, like the YMCA, and right. It's after Nate kind of experiences this traumatic bullying moment where he's playing Marco Polo, with the neighborhood kids, reluctantly, by the way.
Yeah, because his dad wants him to make friends.
And the like when Nate is it, and he's calling out Marco Polo, all the other kids get out of the pool. And at some point, one of the girls, she says, "A chink can't find China."
Yeah.
And it's after all of this, they come home, and, you know, Marilyn notices that her son is not happy, and she asks what happened, and his dad just kind of says, like, "Oh, he just can't take a joke."
Yeah.
And like, that was just terrible because, and like, even in like James's inner dialogue, he says to himself, like, "Oh, I want to like hug my son. I want to tell him that I understand. I've gone through the same thing." Yeah. But at the same time, he wants to slap him. Like, that was like the actual line in the book. And it's like you said, it's like this toxic masculinity. Like,
and also just he hates so much that his son can't fit in. Right. And he sees like he sees himself in it. And instead of like trying to find a way where he can help his son out, he decides that, like, oh, you're not, like, he blames his son for it.
Yeah.
Like, for being like him, right? Or,
yeah.
There's some, like, there's obviously some messed up internal projection going on.
Yeah. Right. I mean, with Nate, I think he's very. It's weird because his dad wants him to fit in so much, but Nate doesn't really care. He's just okay with like just looking at his books. And I think that is something that differentiates James and Nate. James is actually ashamed of his like antisocial skills. Yeah. And like Nate is just like, oh, it's fine.
He just wants to learn about space and talk about space. And the book goes through, like, there's a whole passage where he's just like absorbing all he can about the astronauts and the space race, and then his dad just like waves it off as like some hobby.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because like you think if this was a first generation immigrant story, they'd be psyched that he's into science, right? I don't know.
It's also the fact that what is it? All of the attention, like, we're going back to Lydia, all of the attention is on Lydia to succeed.
Yeah.
And no, there's a point in the book where Nate gets accepted into Harvard, and Lydia just takes all of the attention. She purposely diverts the attention to her by her saying, like, oh, I'm failing physics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, there's this weird.
So yeah, let's.
Sibling relationship with Nate and Lydia.
So that's so the relationship between the parents and the children obviously set up a lot of these dynamics, but I think it's the the relationship between Nath and Lydia that really kind of, I think, has more of a direct,
yeah,
like, cause. And no, this whole story is about peeling back the layers and finding out why exactly Lydia ended up in the bottom of that lake.
Yeah.
Right. We're trying to figure out, you know, it's not just one thing. It's not someone did this. It was like, this is a result of a whole lifetime of, like,
yeah,
missed opportunities or things that no one said to each other that could have helped.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that, like, secrets, they fester, and yeah, it might start off as, like, one small thing, but then it just gradually piles up, right, and it becomes, like, Lydia's death is, like, what the family does is they go back in their memories and they're trying to find that moment where everything went wrong.
Yeah.
But the problem is there isn't just one moment. It's a series. It's like, it starts with before they even had Lydia. It starts, yeah, with it starts, like, with their parents' generation.
Yeah.
But
it starts with how American culture was back in those times and how that affected. Yeah. And so, okay, something we didn't go into with Lydia also was the fact that, you know, there was the pressure from her dad to be popular, and then there was the pressure from her mom to be
successful. To be a doctor specifically.
Yeah. And then there was also the third part of that was her complicity in it, her acceptance of that's her role. And that stems from a trauma.
Yeah, it's definitely trauma because, okay, first spoiler, I think this is the first spoiler.
We've been
spoiling the entire... If you're listening to this right now, like, it's, you know, it's too late.
You were warned.
You were warned. This is Marilyn, she... Like, this is before she has Hannah.
Yeah.
And she finds out that her mother has passed away. And she goes back to Virginia and she's cleaning out her mother's house. And just being at her mother's house, she realizes that she's become exactly like her mom. She's found a man. She's settled to being a homemaker.
Not just become her mom. She's become what her mom wanted her
Her mom wanted her to be, which is just to, like, marry a man and settle down and have children somewhere. And she realizes that she hasn't, like, she's just not happy with her life. And I think that, I mean, she goes back home, but only for, like, a month or so.
Yeah.
And she prepares to leave, and she, like, you know.
Well, she also goes, so the other thing that happens was she goes off for a drive, right, and ends up in a hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Where she sees one of their neighbors, Dr. Wolf.
Yeah, Jack's mother.
Jack's mother. Who we haven't talked about. Jack is another third character. Like, he's like a side character.
Yeah, he's a supporting character
that, like, is a through line.
Yeah.
His family. So his mother is a
single mom.
Who's a doctor. And then it goes into the whole, like, for Marilyn, she goes into this whole, like, that's what I want to be. And, like, even her coming to terms with the fact that a woman can be a doctor, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, she looks at Dr. Wolf and she thinks, where did I go wrong?
Yeah.
And what went wrong was that she fell in love with a man and got pregnant.
Yeah.
And she thinks that she thinks that it's still not too late for her. And she's right, it's not too late for her. But she makes a questionable decision of leaving her family behind without a note, by the way. She writes a note and then she throws it away. And she just leaves her family in limbo. Like, they're, like, just stuck in this phase of, like, is she coming back or is she just not ever going to be our mom again?
She thinks it'll be better if she just leaves.
Yeah.
And they'll deal with it. They're strong.
Yeah.
You know,
it goes back to the title, like, Everything I Never Told You. Like, if she had, I feel like there would have been still trauma, but I think there would have been less of an impact because if she had left a note saying why she left,
right,
it wouldn't have been left to speculation, and it wouldn't have led to Lydia thinking that it was her fault, that she wasn't a good enough daughter, that she expected too much of her mom. Like, her mom, like, she finds her mom's cookbook, or which was her grandmother's cookbook.
Yeah.
And she finds all these annotations in it, and all of the annotations
are
like,
that cookbook is terrible.
Terrible. But like, the annotations in like the cookbook is just like, oh, like who can be happier than like baking a cake with your daughter or whatever. Yeah. Like,
or
something.
Like a happy husband makes a happy, like a well-fed husband makes a happy household. Yeah.
And like, even without her mom there, Lydia knows that this book has been like the source of suffering for her.
Well, to her, that was her memory of her mom, like pouring
her mom
book.
Cooked.
That was like,
yeah,
her mom's favorite book to her.
Yeah.
Right. And then she goes through and realizes that, no, her mom hated that book.
Yeah.
You know?
And she, when her mother finally comes back, she hides the book and she lies to her mother saying that she destroyed the book.
Yeah.
And her mom thinks in her head, oh, my daughter can be something.
She gets it.
Yeah, she gets it. And that's when this really toxic relationship starts.
Yeah.
With, like, her mother expecting her daughter, like, Marilyn expecting Lydia to
be what she, like, to be what, the perfect, or the over, like, not even, like, yeah, to be
her, pretty
her,
much.
Yeah, what,
like,
she wanted to be.
Miniature version of her. And I don't think that's just, I mean, it's weird because Marilyn is not Asian. She's white. And it's just, like, it's just weird sometimes because I'm reading the book and I keep thinking that she's Asian because of the tendencies and the,
I mean, that's
choices
just
that
our
she
own
makes.
Like, that's unfortunately a stereotype and a trope that gets,
yeah, it
gets,
but the thing is that parents do that, like,
yeah,
a lot
parents
of parents
live vicariously through their kids. They see them as
their legacy. Yeah. And
I mean, that's the first point I made also this podcast was, it's interesting that even though this isn't a, like, this isn't about, oh, I came here to sacrifice so much to give you a better life. It's still I came to sacrifice so much to give, yeah, you a better life, or to give you the life I wanted, right?
Yeah.
But also during that time was, because there was no note, James, who during her Marilyn's mother's meltdown back when they got married, overheard everything about how, you know, this is a mistake, your children will regret this, and he like thinks that's the reason why she left, because,
yeah,
the note that she wrote wasn't exactly a good note neither.
No, it was like super vague, saying that she like she's not happy and this wasn't the life that she thought,
yeah,
she would have, and that could be interpreted in so many ways. And like, one of the ways that James interprets it is that, oh, she didn't expect to marry an Asian man.
Yeah.
And
so
that's why she's unhappy.
He like reconstitutes the note from the trash and like decides that, oh, it's his fault. Like, everyone decides that it's their fault because of something they couldn't do. Right. For James,
yeah,
he couldn't be what she wanted. Because he never, like, another example of things they never told each other. He never knew that she wanted more than just housewife, to,
yeah,
be more than just a housewife. To him, there was an instance where they also talked about how she was offered a assistance job at a lab at,
yeah,
the school, at the chemistry school, and she really, really wanted it. But to him, he internalized it as, well, people are going to think that we don't make enough. And he thinks about his mom working and having like rough hands and decides that he doesn't want that for his wife. That's not something.
Yeah. Which is selfish in,
yeah,
a way, because it's saying that, like, oh, I want to prove that I am a capable man and husband and can, like, protect my family and provide, when really it's not about him. It's,
yeah,
about her, like, achieving her dreams.
So she ends up coming back because she finds out she's pregnant again,
with Hannah.
With Hannah, the third, the youngest daughter. But they never talk about, like, he never comes to the realization that, of why she really left. They just know that, well, she's pregnant. They had to contact him and they found her.
Yeah.
You know?
So, like, they never talk about it after she gets home. They just kind of sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
And and she still rebels in the small way of not cooking anymore.
Yeah. Because,
like, after she comes home, she's just like, never again. Everybody's just going to eat SpaghettiOs and cereal. And,
yeah. And then from then on, it becomes all about Lydia.
All about Lydia.
Then, so now going back to the relationship between Lydia and her brother, Nate, and how that, now that starts to build where she's getting all the attention. He is kind of there for her, but also slowly growing resentful, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, I think, I don't think Nate says it, but he's resentful of his mother because after she left, his family was never the same again. Yeah. And, I mean, to him, there's a scene where Nate asks for a hard-boiled egg, and that's his favorite thing to eat in the morning. And before his mom left, like, she broke down crying when she when he asked for a hard-boiled egg. Yeah. When he had a tantrum, because it reminded her of, like, her mother.
Yeah.
Because when she was at her mother's house, she was reading the Betty Crockett cookbook, and she was reading through the basic eggs recipe.
Like the six ways to prepare an egg for a happy family.
And then when she comes back home, like, she refuses to cook. And to Nate, that just means that, like, to Nate, it's kind of a very childish way to see a family, but he equates homemade food to, like, a happy family. And because there are no more hard-boiled eggs, there are no more, like, meals cooked by his mother personally. Mm-hmm. He thinks that there's some... He senses that something's missing in his family. That, like, his family, there's something off. And yeah. And then, like, with... If you add that with Lydia getting all the attention, of course he's going to have resentment for his mother as well.
Right.
Yeah, but...
And then, but from Lydia's point of view, she still sees Nate as her big brother, her... Pretty much her, if not partner, her hero, right? Her, the one person in the world who understands
where she
comes from, that understands her parents, like, just as much as she does.
Yeah, and I think the crux of their relationship is from that incident when they were, like, yeah, children. They go to a lake, and Nate, he pushes her into the lake. I don't know if it's, like...
I think it comes from, it was the first time that jealousy, that resentment, yeah, kind of came to the surface, where he was frustrated that his mother, they don't pay attention to him anymore, that, yeah, Lydia's all they care
and
about.
And they're very young, so yeah, it's understandable that he would push his sister, who doesn't know how to swim, but he, like, understands immediately that...
Well, I think this is when, right before their mom came back, right?
Was it right before? No, I think it was right after. It was, like, right after, and, like, Lydia was getting all the attention, right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because that would make more sense. But, yeah. Yeah. But, like, as soon as Lydia goes into the water, he realizes what he's done, and he realizes that, I think I have the actual thing. I have the actual quote. He says, "Whenever he remembered this moment, it lasted forever. A flash of complete separateness as Lydia disappeared beneath the surface. Crouched on the dock, he had a glimpse of the future. Without her, he would be completely alone." And then ahead, he says, "He and his parents and their lives would spin into space where she had been. They would be sucked into the vacuum she left behind." So he understands that without Lydia, his family would even go into bigger chaos.
Right.
And then with Lydia, she views Nath as her savior, the right one person who will always bring her back from the brink.
Right, because he jumps in right afterwards. And even then, when she got pushed in, from her point of view, she was, like, she was welcoming it.
Yeah, she, yeah, was grateful. And they both realize at that moment that the attention that Lydia is getting, it's too much for her. She doesn't want it.
Yeah.
But she's accepting it because she wants her mother to stay.
To her, that's the family, like...
Yeah, I think, yeah, the really messed up thing about Marilyn's parenting with Lydia is that every time she kind of pushes her dreams of being a doctor onto her daughter, she always ends it with, "Only if you want to."
Right. Very, like, passive
only,
aggressive.
Yeah, only if you want to, like, be happy. And the thing is, Lydia can say no, but because of that trauma when she was a child, she thinks that her mom is just not going to be there if she says no.
Right.
So she keeps saying yes, even though she knows that, like, when she, I think there's a scene when she's, like, 6 years old, and she's at, like, she's at the table and her mom's like giving her math questions, and she knows that in the distance, like, the problems are going to get harder, and her mom's are going, the books are not going to have pictures anymore. Like,
right.
Like, she can, she already knows at this young age that she can't live up to these expectations, and she can feel her mother's, like,
yeah,
like, pressure on her, and she just says yes. And I don't know if that's definitely not just an Asian American experience. That's just
anybody with parents, yeah, who have that. I mean, you think about all these stories about stage parents and like, oh, helicopter parents and things like that. Like, it's definitely a, it's not an Asian thing, but for like, for a lot of, maybe it's a cultural thing for Asians, education is where that manifests a lot, right? Because yeah, that's for Asian culture, especially East Asian culture, education was how you advanced in
society. I mean, look at James. Like, he advanced because, yeah, he passed that test to that elite boarding school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he jumps in and saves her. And from that moment on, like, there's that passage where, like, he would always remember pushing her, but she would always remember him saving her.
Yeah.
And that becomes, like, that becomes another asymmetrical thing that we as readers see, but them as characters don't see, is, like, Nathan doesn't see how important his support was to her.
Yeah, and at the same time, Lydia doesn't know how Nath sees her.
Yeah.
And, like...
So this turns into... So fast forward to them as teens, which is the worst part for any siblings, oh, close, God, in age. If you have... If you're both teens in the same time in the same high school, like, not a good scene.
Oh, really? I wouldn't know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he starts... He gets into Harvard.
Yeah.
And then, basically, he starts... He's a senior, she's a junior, or a sophomore. Anyways, they're both in high school, and he starts to start preparing for the future. Leaving home, like, it's all he ever wanted, because screw my parents, like, they don't care about me. I'm going to be free from everything. And then she starts realizing that in a year, Nath will be gone.
And there will be no one to, like, yeah, support her through all of the...
Yeah, and then, yeah, she starts to realize that Nath doesn't feel the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so she starts, like, kind of punishing him for it.
Rips up his acceptance letter to Harvard, and she tries to hide, like, subsequent correspondences from the school.
And then she starts hanging out with, like, his rival.
Yeah, his frenemy. Jack. Well, not frenemy, yeah, because they're not friends, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, frenemy. I mean, Jack wanted to be his friend.
Yeah. I mean, besides the revelation later is, like, Jack's actually...
In love with Nath.
And so all these times that Nath feels that Jack was mocking him for, like, pretending to be his friend or trying to be nice... was actually him actually trying to make an effort.
Trying to be nice, yeah.
But there's all this tension between the siblings that just gets, like, wires get crossed, miscommunications. And you see, you know, like, it's typical teen stuff, really, yeah, between siblings. But in the context of this kind of, this family dynamic kind of creates a really, really... It puts her in a bad place. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you saw signs of, like, mental illness.
Oh, yeah, like...
In Lydia, right?
I mean, I think the reason why I, like, cried when I read this book was not... I mean, the writing is beautiful. The prose is gorgeous. But I projected a lot of my own personal baggage onto the characters because, in my family, I am pretty much Lydia. Mm. Like, I am the child where my parents put all of their hopes on me. And I mean, and it's not exactly the same thing, but I have two younger brothers and they're autistic. So it was kind of like, oh, she is our only option. So, like, I totally understood why. Like, I totally understood Lydia's feelings. And and, like, for in my personal experience, it, like, that expectation from, like, my parents, it had developed into depression. And a lot of the thoughts that Lydia had in the book were very much the same thoughts I had when I was her age.
Right.
And And we had a little debate at the meeting about what was the outcome, like,
right,
of, because you find out towards the end of the book that
she went on alone out into the lake
in the middle of the night,
yeah.
And you thought she purposely committed, like, she purposely took her own life,
yeah,
whereas I thought it was an accident that was not really well thought out.
Yeah, so there are two interpretations of that. Like, it was the penultimate chapter. It was like the, yeah, chapter before the last chapter, where you kind of find out, like, it's from Lady's point of view, the night that she fell into the lake. And then so she goes out there and she starts thinking about the moment things all went wrong, right? Which is like the theme of the book. Everyone's trying to find that one moment, that one, yeah, moment that, like, things went wrong with, like, that,
yeah,
ended up with Lydia being dead. And for her, what was the moment that led to her being this, like, her family being this?
Well, the day, yeah, that she decided to go out onto the lake, it was just a bad day.
Yeah.
Like, she finds out that Jack is gay and, like, she's
actually into her brother.
Yeah, actually into, yeah, her brother. And she's dealing with, like, her brother leaving for college in, like, yeah, a couple of days.
And realizing that, like, and this is something that, that's just, you know, something that I kind of recognized in Nathan was, like, when I was in college, I didn't really call home that often either. And I know that, yeah, kind of distressed my parents a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh.
And just, like, the feeling that everything will be fine. Like, I just need to, like, I need to be me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, not knowing how that affects the people back home, especially when they rely on you.
Yeah.
Right. So it was right after Nathan got back from his trip.
Yeah.
Where she did call him after, like, he promised to call every night. He didn't.
He didn't.
She called him while he was drunk for the first time.
Never a good idea. just never answer the phone when you're drunk.
Yeah.
And he just says some cruel things to her. Yeah. Like, she calls him. I think it's, like, after she suspects that her dad
was having an affair. We didn't even talk about that.
Oh, well, we'll bring Louisa into the picture, but like, she thinks that her dad's having an affair, and it's just too many things is yeah, happening at once, and he just brushes her off. He says, oh, did dad buy you a diamond necklace? Oh, boohoo, too bad, you get all the attention, why is that, like, yeah, a terrible thing? And he just kind of leaves her hanging.
Yeah. And then so,
and then on that same day, like, when she when on the same day she, like, commits suicide, or not suicide,
she falls in the lake.
Falls in the lake. She fails her driving test too.
Yeah,
which is, like, a culmination of so many things, and that's why, like, I thought it was an accident, because, yeah, she has this epiphany when she's going to the lake. She realizes Nate's feelings for the first time. She realizes how it's been such a burden on him, for him to, like, always support her while getting no attention from his parents at all. And she makes all these promises, saying that she's going to tell her mom that she's not going to be a doctor,
yeah,
that she's not going to do the things that her mom wants her to do. She's going to tell her mom that she can go back to school and achieve her dreams. It's not too late. She's going to tell her dad that she doesn't have friends, and she doesn't have to have friends. And there's, like, all these promises that she makes to herself. And it just, and to me, it just didn't seem like someone who would,
I guess, purposely, yeah, for me, because those epiphanies, those thoughts were interspersed with her getting onto the boat, pushing out into the middle of the lake. And I guess this is where maybe I didn't read enough into it, or I just need stuff explained to me more, because, like, I didn't see, like, because the chapter ends right when she steps off the boat, right? Yeah. And so,
I guess yeah, like, the thing, the main issue that came up in the meeting was, like, oh, like, she knows that she can't swim. So,
right,
why is she in a lake in the middle of the night? And,
right,
to me, it just seemed like I said, I think she had depression. I think she, right, showed signs of depression. And if not depression, definitely signs of anxiety.
Yeah.
And I think she was just in a middle of an episode where like there was too many bad things that were happening in one day, and she kind of like suddenly hits this mood swing,
and she doesn't have the support.
Maybe like those thoughts, those promises that she makes to herself, they're genuine, and in this bad mindset that she's in, she's like, okay, like let's seal the deal by facing my fear in like this physical form of like, because she's always been afraid of the water. So
yeah, I guess for me, like, if there was like an extra paragraph showing her struggling to swim to the shore, I think that's just me needing like, yeah.
But that's like, the whole deal with that chapter though, because it doesn't matter. She's dead. And the whole book is just on the family coping with that and realizing that they didn't know Lydia, the real Lydia. And each of the family members, except for Hannah, like they see Lydia in a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of the most heartbreaking scenes, I think, was when James called all of Lydia's supposed friends and he finds out that she has no friends. And then with like Marilyn, she finds the cookbook and she realizes that her daughter lied, and it wasn't science that her daughter loved. It was her, and she put all these expectations on her. And then with Nath, like he realizes things with Jack, like she wasn't sleeping with him and she wasn't just doing things to.
Like they all react in different ways.
Different ways to grieve, definitely. Yeah.
And again, the interesting thing is the asymmetric information. Like, we already knew that she didn't have friends because Nathan knew.
Yeah.
So when her dad was talking about Nathan, you're like, no, that's full of shit.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they already knew what they were going to find. We didn't really touch on Hannah. Talk about Hannah
really quickly.
So Hannah's the baby sister, kind of the forgotten one. And it's really, really something that I really enjoyed, even though it's a little sad, was the different, like, how sibling dynamics were expressed, and how in typical, normally in these stories, like the baby is usually the one that gets all the attention. But in this one, she's kind of like, because Lydia's getting all the attention, she's kind of just...
Well, she comes after the family dynamics had changed.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of like this...
She's literally like the accident. Right? Like...
Like, she's careful not to disrupt the relationships that are already formed. Like, she was born after her mother ran away. She doesn't know what Nathan and Lydia went through. She doesn't have the memories. And...
She's the reason her mother came back.
Like, I think Hannah is the glue to the family because, she's the reason why her mother came back in the first place. And then after Lydia dies, she's the one who brings the family together. She points out the shoe print on the ceiling and tells her dad, like, look. And, James has this moment where, like, oh, like, she's like, my daughter is precious because she's my daughter, not because she's pretty or popular or
I really liked just reading her test out this new like filling the void that like Lydia left, kind of like filling in testing out like her reactions to this new attention that she was getting. I thought that was super cute.
I mean, one thing I did want to touch up on was actually two things I wanted to touch up on. Let's go with one of our Facebook commenters, Trina. Like she said, like, oh, this book is set in Ohio in the 70s, and maybe I should pull up the actual thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, because I don't want to misinterpret the. Give me a second. This is from Trina Becker. From Facebook, and she says, an observation that could also be a discussion is how isolating it may be for Asians to grow up in a small town or village that's 100% white. This is as opposed to growing up in, say, San Francisco. Well-meaning parents like college professors move to small towns for tenure track positions. do they ever really wonder about being the other where their children are concerned?
You know, it's really interesting because I have a friend with that this exact thing happened. Like,
really?
Her parents moved to Indiana for work, and then she became the only Asian in her community, like in her high school.
Yeah.
And I remember her telling stories about how growing up in that environment, because she was born in, I think, Maryland. So in, like, you know, a lot of Chinese families there. And then being put in, like, they moved when she was still really young. And she told stories about how she actively rejected anything Asian. Like, when her parents, when she brought her friends home, she would, like, throw fits at her parents if they tried to lay out, like, Asian snacks. Or if the, you know.
So similar to James's reaction.
Kind
too.
Of, yeah. Like, it would just became such a. And this is something that I find, because I grew up in San Gabriel, the San Gabriel Valley, which is very Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going to the East Coast for a while and meeting people who didn't grow up in that kind of environment, it's really interesting that I found myself more confident in my ethnic identity than kids that didn't have that, that were the only ones.
Yeah.
Like, for a lot of them, it wasn't until college when they actually met other people that were of the same cultural group that they started, like, even starting to accept their own, like,
identity
and, like, actively learning about it, or even being able to admit that that's what they are. Like, I think it comes from, like, as a kid, right? Especially in as a teen, there's nothing worse than not feeling like you don't belong.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas as you become more of an adult, you want to, like, stick out.
Right? that is true. Yeah, to some degree. I think with our parents' generation, it doesn't really matter if you're the other, because to them, they were always the other. They came during a time when it was difficult.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess, like, for their children, like, I've met some parents who think, like, oh, like, my children are going to be American, so they're going to fit in more. And then there are, like, other parents who, you know, stick to ethnic communities, and they say, oh, I don't want my child to forget where they came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it really depends on the parents' experience
and
in America.
Their own kind of idea of what it doesn't mean to be successful. Is being successful assimilating?
Yeah.
Or is assimilation a part of being successful?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the one, like, if that's a value that they hold, then yeah, they're going to encourage you to assimilate. And if it's not, then I don't know.
It's
not going to be as big a deal.
I mean, like, just speaking from, like, my own personal experience, I am an immigrant. I immigrated to the States when I was little, and my family immigrated here. My mom was around my age, actually, when she came here. And that's kind of mind-boggling. But my dad, he is, like, you know, he speaks English. He's not completely fluent, but he's semi-fluent. He runs his own business. And to him, it's kind of been more of assimilation. Like, I think he's told me, like, when I was still going to college, he's like, oh, write movies that white people will like. That's how you'll make money. But, you know, like, I leaned into the Asian American experience, and I don't think he's ever really understood that. And I think that's a common
problem. I mean, I get that from my parents, too. Like, my dad's super into music, but he is, like, he does make comments like, well, like, an Asian American can never be as big as a white, because that's not, like, they're very, I think it's a very market-based approach of things. Like, it's like when you're an immigrant coming in, or if you're, like, an outsider, right? Mm-hmm. Fitting in is a survival, like, technique, you know, not sticking out. And, like, you know, that's the history of Chinese food, right, in America, is cooking stuff that the white man will eat and pay you money for so you can buy clothes and food for your kids and your family, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very, that's very much an ingrained like story in our Asian American like collective narrative, right? This, and you know, if ends up feeding into the whole mono minority thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, for like going back to the book though, like I think James didn't even consider the fact that his children would be the other, because he has this moment when he reads like a newspaper clipping and it says, oh, like children of mixed race families struggle to find belonging.
Yeah.
And he like has a meltdown after that. And like, I guess to him, it was just kind of like a given because his wife is not Asian. His wife is white. And he just thinks that his kids have this free ticket into fitting in, but
yeah,
that's not the case. Even if you were of the same ethnicity, fitting in is hard.
Yeah. I think something that talking to not just my parents but also from some of my friends talking to their parents, like we think of our parents about how everything they do is for us, for their kids, for the family. But the truth is, like, when they were young, they were thinking about themselves a lot, right? like, James, the reason they moved to Ohio wasn't because, oh, this is going to be a great place for my kids. It's like, oh, it's where I can find a job and support my family.
It's the only place he could find a
job. Because he was promised a position at Harvard, but, you know, had to, like, they gave it to someone else for vague but probably racist reasons.
Yeah, it's the 1970s. Even now, like it's still a problem. I still see articles about Asian American professors trying to find tenure, and they get passed over.
Especially as like a American history.
Yeah, which brings me to the point of, if the story was set in 2016, how different would it be?
I think probably a lot different.
But do you think the family dynamics would still be the same?
I think, well, okay, so if we're going to, if all the relationships are the same, we'd have to recast James's parents as members of the 1980s wave of immigrants, which is different than the paper, like the 1940s.
Which is Louisa's generation. Yeah. Louisa, the woman that James has an affair with.
His teaching assistant.
Yeah, teaching assistant. Which is weird because Marilyn was his student and he was just like, no, I'm sorry, you're my student. I can't have like a romance. And then now, and he has sex with Louisa on the day of his daughter's funeral. That was just like very hard for me to swallow.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, there's this whole thing where she is so confident, not confident, but she is much more comfortable, I think is a better word, about her Chinese-ness. Like she cooks.
Yeah, she cooks Chinese food.
She lives on her own. Like
when people come up to her and like say like racist slurs, like chink, she kind of brushes it off. Whereas like James, he's kind of been embarrassed.
Yeah.
There's like more of an owning up to it than James.
Because like the 70s and 80s, that wave of immigration from China and Taiwan were, a lot of times people were here for grad school. They were white collar workers. They were educated. They were here to fill skilled positions because that was that was how you got a visa, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how my family came to the States.
It's much how my family came.
Yeah. So I think that would have made a little bit of a difference in terms of James's upbringing.
I mean, I still feel like he would have that strained relationship with Nath. Like he would still I mean, like if he still went to boarding school in the middle of nowhere in like New England with a bunch of rich white kids, I feel like that
would still mess him up.
That would still mess him up.
But in terms of Marilyn being like interracial marriage, as this might become not taboo, still culturally iffy in some circles.
It like for it like I read that interracial marriages with Asians mm-hmm. like that didn't become widely accepted until 1997.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
it still
would have been a little iffy. I kind of wish our friend Scott was here.
I know, he's right?
An Asian man who married a white lady.
I'm pretty sure he's like yelling at us right now.
Please comment with your impressions. but yeah, like. And I think in terms of the kids dynamic, back in the 70s, there was no internet. Like, your world was your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that has, like, as sucky as people can be on the internet is still also a place where you can find others who think, share your experiences, for better or worse, because there's some dangers of being in the echo chamber as well, especially, you know, when it comes to...
Like, I feel like Nath would have found, like, an early space forum, and it's just, like, a bunch of guys talking about, like, astrophysics and like, becoming an astronaut. And then with Lydia, I feel like she, I mean, maybe she would have connected more with people because she's not the only, like, Chinese girl at her school, but I don't know. Like, I think her struggles was mainly with her relationship with her mom.
Right.
So I feel like she still would have had the same problems if her mom still pushed her to become a doctor.
Right. Because like we said, the parents wanting their children to be what they could have
family
been.
Family troubles
is
go
not,
deep.
Yeah, that's is not something that has gone away. You know? Now people are more like sneaky about it with all these parenting techniques and like how to negotiate, how to talk to your kids to like get them to think critically and things. I'm sure Marilyn would have been one of those parents who like reads all the latest studies on how to parent.
I mean, it brings us to the question of like Marilyn, like would she have gone back to college, taken the courses? Would she have gotten an abortion with Hannah and just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even with Nath. I think that is definitely like they even mentioned it in the story how this is like years before they even come up with the pill.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean like birth contraception like that, that it existed.
Yeah. It just was sketch.
It was super sketch. Like it was really sketch with a lot of side effects. So it's understandable, but with Marilyn wanting to become a doctor, I feel like she would have been educated on her choices.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I know women who have done this and, like, they're, like, not from the same generation as, Like, I know women who have, I guess I can just say my mother because my mother did give up her career for me. Mm-hmm. And very early on in our relationship, in our mother-daughter relationship, like, she did push a lot. Funny enough, my mom wanted to be a doctor. My mom wanted to be a doctor, but then she chose to go to music school and she wanted to be a singer. And from like my early childhood, I remember her like wanting to mold me into this prodigy musician. I specifically remember her saying that there are two types of geniuses in the world. Like, people who are born as a genius and people who, like, work hard to become a genius.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember that being, like, drilled into me. And
So that's actually the opening line of one of my business professors back in business school. He would say, there are two types of people in this room. Or there are two types of people in this world. People who are geniuses and people who work really hard. I assure you, none of you are geniuses.
Oh, my God. But...
Like, but it was kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah. Like, my mom isn't, like, I mean, she is, like, younger. Mm. And, like, I've known people who've, like, voluntarily given up their careers for their children.
Yeah.
But then they, I don't know. I think the era of...
I mean, given her character, though, like, for her, I think they made it a point to say that she didn't have a choice.
Yeah, she didn't have a choice.
Right, in terms of, like... medical viability. So maybe, yeah, like if we were to take this historical fiction, which is set at a certain time.
But she's also from Virginia. Like, she's from the South, though.
But she definitely has, like, those, like, feminist leanings, though. Like, yeah, those early true. Feminist leanings, you know?
It's hard to say. I mean, I mean, there's a reason why this book is set in 1960s, 1970s in Ohio.
Yeah. If it took place today, it would probably just be James, Dr. Marilyn, and Hannah. Because,
yeah,
like, Lydia and Nate would have not existed, probably. I don't know. Because that would have been during medical school time, right? I don't know. Yeah.
And... I mean, we're running a little long, but I'm going to try and squeeze one more thing
in. We'll finish this up,
I'm not going to pull it up, but on Goodreads, one of our book club members, Lauren Lola, also part of the collaboration family.
Yeah, she's up in San Francisco, so she couldn't join us for the live
event. She was also like expressing her
bird attack outside.
Yeah, they attack at the same time every day, but she's expressed her frustrations about the trope of interracial marriages not working out. And that was also a thing that came up in our meeting today with Yiming, who is also from a mixed race family. And I don't know, is that really a trope? Or
so part of me wants to say that for this type of story, there needs to be that kind of drama. I wouldn't say I think the author in this instance does a good job setting up where that conflict comes from.
Standalone novel, I think it works. But then if you think about like books with interracial
families. So as a not avid reader, I don't have the context to make that call. But I do see where it can be lazy. Because if you're looking for places if you're looking for sources of drama, it's pretty easy to say a cultural like kind of conflict, right? Not having the same background or not having like having different values. I think for me, it comes down to like if it was just because, oh, you don't understand Chinese people, that would have been really like, oh, that's kind of lame. But with Marilyn and James specifically, it's a conflict between her being forced to give up her dream and him having his insecurities about.
Yeah, definitely different. His insecurities play into the
it's
the
not
marriage.
Like, oh, Marilyn couldn't like, it's not because James's mother didn't like Marilyn because she's white or whatever.
That's a totally different book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've read like so many of those books.
So I think in this case, like, I think the drama is justified, but I do see where they come from, where this type of like, it could easily have been really lazy.
Yeah,
like this conflict.
I mean, if you think about it, like even with our last pick, Heroine Complex, Evie Tanaka, who is of mixed race background, her father is missing from the picture, and like their mom is dead.
Yeah.
So I can like I think there is this tendency to have family drama in interracial like families and in literature, but. I personally can't say because I haven't read enough of those books to say, but...
I think it's half that and half just... I think it's also a... So I don't know if this is the case. Maybe your readers can fill us in, like, when it comes to, like, black and white interracial marriages as well. Is it that kind of thing? Because to me, it also is a little bit of, like, there's a little bit of rep sweats that come into it where, like, maybe... As we get enough, because I think that was another thing that came up was the fact that why does James have to be such a dick, right?
Yeah, and why does he have to be such like a stereotypical Asian man who is like quiet and represses his feelings and like unleashes his like masculinity in like a really toxic way?
But at the same time, like, why not, right? And so I think wanting, there's something to be said about wanting this story to be an accurate representation of your experience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, accepting as a representation of a experience. And, like, hopefully in the future, there will be more representations and more experiences. So we don't have to hang our hats on
Yeah, we definitely one. Brought this up at the live book club meeting where we're at a wave. We're at the third wave of like, okay, we have our foot in the door in representation. We have a decent number of creators out there. We just need to like diversify
the stories.
Diversify the stories and like I can understand the frustration because you want this book to.
You want to show your friends, here, read this.
Yeah, this is my experience.
This is everything you need to know me and my like my history.
But the other thing that I brought up like at the end of our book club meeting today was like how different non-Asian readers would react to this book.
Right.
Because I recommended this book to a couple of non-Asian friends, and so far what they've told me was, wow, I don't know a lot of the history surrounding this. Like they didn't know about Loving versus Virginia case.
There's a movie coming out, so you guys will know.
They didn't know about Paper Sons. They I think one of them told me that they didn't know that Asians came to the country, like Asian Americans existed that early in American history. And I was like, what are you talking about? like, of course, like they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, the Asian American story is a very old one. And
it spans at least like almost two centuries now, I want to say.
Yeah, and they were very surprised by that. So I think this book is very educational for for non-Asian readers, and I think they will take away, I mean, for us, it's just like, oh, like trope. But for them, it's new. It's new territory, and maybe it will help them understand just the kind of conflicts that families like these go through.
And, you know, I think we mentioned, like, James is a dick. Like, that's not sugar. He's kind of an asshole dad. But the struggles that he goes through growing up and, like, those are real. Like, I've met
people with the same issues as James.
Yeah, they're not as much an asshole like him. But those are real struggles that, you know, that you go through growing up in his experience. Especially, like, if you think about those really rich private schools.
Yeah.
On that note, should we, final thoughts, I guess.
Final thoughts. Well, going by my Goodreads rating, I rated this book 4 out of 5 because, you know, I thought it was beautifully written, and I thought the conflicts and character development, they were real. Mm-hmm. But I did have qualms about like James and just being overall like frustrated by like how no one is talking to each other and like problems could have been solved if people just kind of.
But I feel like those were intentional.
And no, like, it's conflicts. Intentional. That's why I gave it like 4 out of 5 stars. It's just like my personal.
Yeah, the fifth star is like personal. Yeah. Like yeah. I think for me, it's definitely, I go more of a thumbs up, thumbs down rating system. So okay. Like if it's a thumbs up, as in people should read this. Yeah. I mean, I think I told you, Rira warned me that this is a heavier read than Hero Complex. And yeah, and that it'll take me a little bit longer. And it did. It took me 2 nights instead of 1 night. But
our book club was split into 2 parties. Like one party was like Marvin and myself. We just kind of binge read through
it. But that's my style.
Yeah, I like to binge read too. And then like the other party was just like, it was so emotionally taxing. They could only read a chapter a day.
Yeah.
And I think that's why like.
But I think we talked about, but the both of us got caught up with the thriller aspect of it. Like what happened?
Yeah. And also it jumps time. Like it's just like you finish one chapter and you're like, wait, it just jumped to another time. I need to read this now because what if I miss something?
I actually got a little annoyed that it kept jumping back. It's like, I just wanted, not that it was bad. It was great, but it was like, oh man, I have to read about James again.
It's important to the story, Marvin. Anyway, we've decided on, or should I say I've decided.
Rira has decided on what our next month's book is for the Books and Boba Book Club. So.
Yes, so we will be reading a graphic novel, and the graphic novel is Monstrous by Marjorie Liu. I hope, hopefully I pronounced that correctly. Liu? Yeah. Yes.
It's Liu in Chinese, but it doesn't matter.
Anyway, it's a graphic novel, and it's sci-fi, and it's going to be great. Well, it's the reason why we're reading a graphic novel is because I think it will be...
It's a big holiday.
It's a big holiday month, and...
After you finished your turkey and stuffing and wrap up with a nice,
I don't know, I spend longer reading graphic novels because I just kind of, take in all of the illustrations. But for some people, they just kind of... skim through, but I've heard great things about Monstrous, and I am very excited to talk about it next month.
Awesome. Well, that was our talk on Everything I Never Told You, a book by Celeste Ng, published by the Penguin Press. We both recommend it, and if you want to contribute more to this discussion, please give us a post on our Facebook or Twitter, or on our Goodreads forum. There's a growing thread there with everyone's thoughts. Please be mindful of spoilers, so please make use of those spoiler tags for you who haven't read it yet. And that's our episode for Books and Boba. This has been Marvin and Rira.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys next month. This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and produced and edited by Marvin Yue. For further discussion on the books covered at Books and Boba, please visit our Goodreads forum. You can find the link on our Facebook page at Books and Boba, as well as by searching for the group Books and Boba on Goodreads.com. Books and Boba is also a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a brand new collective of Asian American podcasts and podcasters. You can learn more about the collective as well as check out our founding slate of programs by visiting the website www.podcastpotluck.com.